Good evening, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post a question on our wall on Facebook, send a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. This evening's show is brought to you by Eden Foods, the most trusted name in certified organic clean food. Shop online at EdenFoods.com and enter the coupon code ORGVIEW, that's ORGVIEW, when prompted during checkout to receive 20% off any regularly priced items, excluding cases. For other promotional offers, please visit TheOrganicView.com's website.
As we continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, which is the only radio show focused on the impact of neonicotinoids, my special guest co-host Tom Theobald and I will discuss this week's news and will also take calls from the audience. If you have any questions, please call in towards the middle to the end of the show. The number is 917-932-1068, or you can email us at bnews@theorganicview.com. So first, I'd like to welcome to the show my co-host, Tom Theobald. Good evening, Tom.
Hello, June. It's been a really interesting week, so we have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we certainly do. Now, one of the most talked about subjects has been this whole announcement from the EPA in regards to their findings, in which they issued a statement that they found that neonicotinoid seed treatments were of little or no benefit to U.S. soybeans.
Yeah, that was very interesting. And I got several emails within the hour after that was announced, and every one of them started with the word wow.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that, well, there are a bunch of comments that were sent in also, but it's interesting that they made the announcement and, okay, well, what next? Did they just make the announcement and that's it? They haven't said anything as far as what they're going to do next. Have you heard anything?
Well, this is a report by the Biological Economic Analysis Division, BEAD. And so this is a report, and everybody is blown away by what they have found, what they've said, but the real test is whether there's any action to follow. And unfortunately, the history of the EPA has been to ignore things like this. And with the neonicotinoids particularly, they repeatedly disregarded the recommendations of their scientists as to the toxicity of these chemicals and went right ahead and put them out on the market. So I think we're naturally a little skeptical. We'll see what the next step is and whether it comes soon.
Now, coincidentally, EPA approved the new 2,4-D herbicide blend, which apparently is paving the way for more GE crops. Now, there were a number of comments that I want to talk about, especially one from Graham White. And the thing that I want to talk about right now is they make the statement about the neonics not being being of little or no value to U.S. soybeans. And this whole thing with the 2,4-D herbicide blend, okay, if the U.S. soybeans are predominantly GE, isn't it true that when they sell the seeds, they're going to be treated prior to planting? So
well,
it's kind of pointless.
That's one of the controversies, because farmers have had difficulty, particularly with a commodity crop like corn, in getting seed that hasn't been treated. And several people have raised the issue to me whether or not the farmers are going to be upset with the fact that they've been paying a premium for something that appears to be basically useless. And some of the people have said, you know, maybe there'll be a class action suit from the farmers because they've been misled and they've lost money on this deal.
Now, I want to read some comments that came in. This one in particular is from Graham White, and I think Graham said it. You know, right on. He nailed it. He wrote, "I think EPA's approval of Agent Orange 2,4-D to be used in combination with glyphosate says it all. I think something like a half a million people wrote in to object, and hundreds of NGOs wrote formal objections, waved away like tissue paper. The only thing that matters is what the corporations want. Profits apparently matter. People's health doesn't." And then he wrote, "Soybeans are GM, Roundup resistant, but they nearly always use neonics as a prophylactic insecticide, whether or not they actually need it. My understanding is that soybeans never really did have any insect enemies, a bit like sunflowers." So thank you, Graham, for sending that in. And once again, that really sums it up. What exactly is EPA doing? Are they just trying to appease us?
Well, that's the skeptics would say that this is just a higher order level of posturing. And we've talked a little bit about the letter from Congress to the EPA, the EPA, and the same question has been raised there. What's the follow-through going to be?
In regards to that particular letter, I actually opened a ticket to the EPA has a support process or protocol where basically you can open a ticket and submit your concerns. So basically I submitted my question, which is basically, quote, "I would like to find out if Administrator Gina McCarthy intends to respond to the congressional letter dated September 30th, 2014, and if so, what the course of action will be. Thank you." So we'll see what happens. I know that Congressman Blumenauer's office, Earl Blumenauer's office, is very concerned about this, and I received some correspondence from his office, and basically they haven't received a letter back from EPA in regards to this letter. So it'll be interesting if any of the members of Congress that signed their name to that request will receive any type of response.
Well, it seems to me, June, that the congressman should do more than just sit there and wait for a response. They should show some management initiative and demand a response. These, in effect, the EPA is under their jurisdiction. They are the decision makers, and part of the problem has been there is no management oversight of the EPA, and within the EPA, it appears that much of the management, at least in the area that we deal with, the Office of Pesticide Programs, that the management is not making good decisions, and the congressmen are the next level of management. They shouldn't just sit there and wait for an answer. They should demand an answer from their employees.
I couldn't agree more. Now, the next item that we have on our list of topics is the NACCP conference. So would you please share with the audience some of the feedback that we've received?
Well, I think the best feedback that we've had comes from Peter Jenkins of the Center for Food Safety, and he's given us kind of a brief rundown. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to keep too close a track on it. Whether it's going to be helpful or not, I don't know. I've heard from many of the beekeepers who've been watching it, and their concern is that there's very little discussion of what seems to be the fundamental issue here, which is this drenching of the environment with systemic pesticides.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things pan out with this. I know that there are a lot of people who attended this, so I guess we'll be seeing more of the feedback that'll be circulating throughout social media, as well as from the different websites that are trying to protect the bees.
Well, all these meetings and conferences are wonderful, but at some point we've got to begin doing something. We can't just meet and discuss the problems and not do anything to solve them. And it appears to me and to many other beekeepers that we aren't, and that the intent is simply to extend this out forever.
Yeah, I don't know why there is such a delay with the agency that's supposed to be doing something to protect the bees. I mean, the people who are in charge seem to be taking a very lax position when it comes to doing the things that they're supposed to do. And it's just interesting. It seems like another dog and pony show, doesn't it?
Well, that's, you know, we're trying to be open-minded about this and not criticize everything that's done, but certainly that's the suspicion. We've been to this dance many times before.
Yeah. Well, after so many years of hearing the same thing, I guess perhaps it would be nice to hear something different, to hear something where here in America we're taking action instead of just waiting to see what everybody else does, which that's pretty much the feedback that I get all the time. And to be quite honest with you, it's a little embarrassing. You know, we're used to being leaders in so many different things, and to do something for the environment, to take a position, why we're taking so long is beyond me. Tom, we have actually on the line with us, joining us is Miles McGahey. Miles, good evening and welcome to the show.
Good evening, June. Thanks for having me.
Hello, oh. Miles.
Hi, Thomas. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
So, Miles, can you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself and let us know what's on your mind?
Well, June, I've been a beekeeper for over 25 years on different projects here and in Mexico. My wife's a Mexican national, and I was just the past president now of Boulder County Beekeepers here in Colorado. I've suffered tremendous losses over the years and gone through some extreme efforts to try and prop up the beekeeping operation that my family and I've developed, and it just has become harder and harder over time. Tom, I wonder if you could just speak to the issue of the fact that we, as citizens in our own country, kind of watch the news and we hear little news bites about the problem with bee decline and pollinator loss. And it seems to be kind of a gradual awareness, if we can call it that, and a gradual coming to terms with this issue. As a beekeeper and one who's gone to a lot of trouble to try and survive this, I have had to put more and more inputs and more effort into trying to just maintain the status quo. And I wonder if people out there realize that this is not going to be a gradual decline. It's going to be reaching a tipping point because of all of these very unnatural situations that we've had to continue to achieve, moving bees cross country, getting packages every spring to replace dead outs, making splits. I wonder if people realize that we're probably already past the point of no return now for several years, and only through extraordinary effort by beekeepers, large and small, are there any pollinators left. Can you address
that? Yeah, you know,
one
of the things. One of the things that's been in the news recently that people may be able to relate to a little more readily is this fate of the monarchs. They have declined by 90% since 1995.
They have declined by
And the only reason that the honeybees haven't declined at that same rate is because of the beekeepers. They're on life support, and the beekeepers, as you say, have been propping this system up for several years now, and now we're about to extinguish the beekeepers because the beekeepers are not going to be able to make it under these conditions. And when you remove the beekeepers from that equation, you're going to see a sudden dramatic decline in the honeybee. it's like the tsunami. You know, right now, the beach is wide and clear and everything is quiet, but the wave is coming and it's almost here. And if we don't do something very, very serious, very, very soon, it's going to hit the beach.
Yeah. This whole discussion of bee decline seems so gentle and slow and easy to accommodate. It's a much more precipitous drop that I see coming, and I'm experiencing it now. And I hope that your readers and listeners understand that you are being followed not just in this country but in other countries, and the conundrum isn't really the knowledge or the science. The conundrum is our political system.
That's right. That's a point that Graham has made repeatedly, that this is not really a scientific issue because the science is clear. They simply ignore the science. It's a political decision. It's driven by power and money.
Yeah. If you want to know what's killing bees, it's greed. Plain and simple.
Yes,
greed
it is.
Greed is killing bees.
Well, I think when you take a look at the reaction by the people who are in a position to do something, that alone says it all. I mean, look at how long EPA has taken to say anything about neonics. Not to mention the fact that, okay, they made this big announcement, but where's the plan of action? There is nothing. It's kind of like they are basically issuing a press release and the words have no meaning. To me, I'm at a point where I need to see that their words and actions meet, especially with this
whole...
Well,
it's maybe even more sinister than that, June, in that a lot of times those releases and those awards of funding for bee research centers and all that come out simultaneously when some corresponding negative science that speaks to bee decline caused by some of these chemicals comes out. What a coincidence that they would choose the same day to release their little good news piece.
It is very interesting that they did that. But once again, when you understand that the neonicotinoids are the companion technology to the GMOs, as I said, it was a waste of a press release. Because the seeds are going to be sold, the GMO seeds are going to be sold with the seeds having been treated prior. So regardless of whether they're effective or not, they're still going to be sold as treated seeds. That's basically how they do it, and just in time for the new planting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't
see any real change. And when it's illegal here, they'll sell it to another third world country.
Well, they've been doing that already. But, Miles, since you're in Colorado, do you have any comments about the new recommendations to the Colorado Assembly for changes to the Colorado Pesticide Applicators Act? DORA, they call it?
Well, they're trying to basically cause the whole thing to be written in stone, and it won't be revisited until 2025. And one of our big points is we'd like it to be reviewed every 3 years. These chemicals are coming down the pipe so quick. They change one molecule, and it changes the entire law has to be rewritten. So to be able to really adapt effectively from a legal standpoint, it needs to happen more regularly and much sooner again than just, you know, 2025. There was some good work done by Beth Conray, who's the president of the Colorado State Beekeepers and who sits through all those meetings and gets our 2 cents in as beekeepers, what we'd like to see happen. And it's been not the best situation. If it's supposed to be an equitable and representative numerically of all of the shareholders in these meetings and in these boards, councils, beekeepers are drastically underrepresented, and there is a huge preponderance of pesticide applicators and their lobbyists that are represented. And when you have that kind of deck stacked against you, then you have passage of things that don't really behoove your side of the shareholders.
Along with Beth, there were several people who were working on this, and they have been for almost a year, and they presented some very sensible, well-thought-out suggestions on how to improve the Pesticide Applicators Act to DORA. DORA is the Department of Regulatory Affairs, and they're kind of the overseeing agency when something like this comes up. And it appears to be just another example of the posturing, because they were completely ignored. None of their suggestions were incorporated, and in fact, the Applicators Act was, in their view, made even worse. And I don't know what you do with a system like that.
Well, speaking of new products on the market, I hate to be the one to tell you this, Miles, but Tom and I just saw something before, and it was really, the article appeared on spinnerag.com. Bayer Crop Science plans 2015 release of new corn herbicide Diflex, which is a unique blend of dicamba and CSI Safener technology, which enables corn plants to better withstand herbicidal activity for excellent crop safety. So that will be quite interesting, and they plan to release that in 2015. So once again, as you said, the products keep coming out faster and faster, but as far as what EPA is doing to go through the proper processes, it just doesn't seem to happen anymore.
Well, yeah, this comes right on the heels of the EPA's approval of a pesticide that can be used containing 2,4-D on genetically modified commodity crops that will resist it. So in just two short weeks, they've added dicamba, 2,4-D, and whatever this third one is. I'm not familiar with that, but they're just piling one poison on top of another as the poisons fail.
That's kind of what it boils down to. I think it's a pretty simple equation. On one side, you have honeybees, for gosh sake, and sunshine and flowers and all things beautiful and good. And on the other side, you have poison and death and destruction. So what we're faced with here, and I'm really simplifying this, but this is how I explain it to my kids, we're looking at a life against death struggle. And people haven't really caught on to it yet, because a lot of folks don't make a strong connection with an insect, for gosh sake, but we all like to eat. And this is going to affect our diet. It's going to affect it sooner rather than later. We're in the middle of a political battle here in Colorado about GMO labeling. And we'd all like to see it pass so that people would be able to recognize just how much of their diet has been manipulated by man. And then you could vote with your fork. You could vote with your pocketbook. But the big companies don't want to see that happen. They're spending millions and millions of dollars on TV and magazine and newspaper ads, all against it, saying how it won't help and it'll just be another regulatory agency. On the contrary, I want to know what I'm eating.
Well, they're also
sending feeding my kids.
They're also sending a lot of mixed messages too, Miles. For example, this was sent in by Cosima, who sent in an article that appeared on the StarTribunal.com, and it says Bee Campaign Takes Flight for General Mills. And it basically is this little short video which shows how they're planting wildflowers to help the bees. And it's quite interesting that General Mills was one of the companies that did not support GMO labeling. So when you have a company that basically speaks out of, you know, both sides of its mouth, so to speak, it's just interesting that you know, they want to help the bees, but yet they don't want GMOs labeled. So, you know, make up your mind.
It's interesting.
As long as there's neonics in the ground, if they plant flowers on areas that were already planted with neonicotinoid-treated seeds, those plants that are supposed to be bee-friendly are deadly. And they'll continue to be deadly for years and years to come because it's in the ground soil. It migrates in the water. It's a nightmarish scenario. And this is all propaganda that just basically say, look, we love bees and we're trying to help. Look, we're going to plant these flowers. And at the same time, don't notice what my left hand is doing over here behind the curtain and forget about the GMO legislation and labeling, because you don't really need to know what's going on here behind the stage.
And no, certainly not.
We have to, as a people, take back our power from these people and take responsibility for our own food safety ourselves.
I couldn't agree more.
Miles, thank you so much for calling in. We have a few more minutes left of the show, and we have a few more issues that we want to discuss, but I really appreciate the fact that you called in tonight. It's great hearing from you.
Yeah, thanks, Miles.
You take care now.
All right, later. Bye-bye. Now, we only have a couple of more minutes left, so I just want to run through a couple of these other issues. There's some news from our friends at Friends of the Earth. I just want to mention this one particular subject, which is for Halloween. And this was sent in by Tiffany Fink-Haynes, in which she asked me to share this. And she said that Friends of the Earth is organizing a day of action next week at Lowe's stores across the United States and Canada. So far, nearly 30,000 people have pledged to deliver a Halloween card asking Lowe's to give bees treats, not tricks, and stop selling bee-killing pesticides and garden plants pre-poisoned with these harmful chemicals. And she said, we're also having the on-the-ground actions in front of stores in 6 cities across the U.S. and Canada, and we'll be delivering over 1 million petition signatures to the Lowe's headquarters. Excellent, excellent job, Tiffany. That's just great news. And I think especially Halloween, which is a very big holiday in America and Canada, you know, all over. But the fact that so many candies are contain ingredients that are from that have the GMO ingredients, it's horrible when you think about what we're feeding our kids.
Yeah, the bees have an interesting connection with Halloween. I was just thinking of it as you were talking. The symbol of Halloween has become the pumpkin. Without
that is
the
very
honeybee
true.
And many of the native pollinators, there are no pumpkins. It's that simple.
Now, another thing that I'd like to mention from Friends of the Earth is Whole Foods is now stepping up to the plate and joining them along with many other retailers to fight to save pollinators. So that hopefully they will do something that will be constructive and truly help the efforts by all the different people that are involved with this. One last subject that I'd like to talk about really quickly is this mowing. It's a study. Mowing mitigates bioactivity of neonicotinoid insecticides in nectar of flowering lawn weeds and turf grass gutation. And that was quite a mouthful. But
this is the first look that we've had at the effects of urban and suburban use on turf grass. What are the consequences?
Well, it's interesting because they're saying when you mow, it helps decrease the effects, correct?
Right, but then the flowers come back, whether they're dandelions or Dutch clover or whatever it may be, and those systemic pesticides, the neonicotinoids, are still there. They're drawn up, and they're drawn up in toxic levels. And this contaminates urban and suburban environments to the same degree that agricultural land has been contaminated. We've turned North America into a toxic waste site.
Yes, we certainly have. And unfortunately, when it comes to lawn care, a lot of people mulch, so it kind of defeats the purpose because the grass clippings are just going to compost. But we are We are out of time. Tom, thank you so much for joining me tonight. And folks, stay tuned each week, same time, same bat channel. And please email us with any questions that you have. The email address is bnews@theorganicview.com. Have a great evening, everyone.